things, and we've sorted out what we think are probably the five hardest things that happen to people in their lives. And last week we talked about rejection, and I heard that was relevant. I got some feedback that, yeah, some people have suffered that. If you thought that was relevant this morning, we're talking about disappointment. Yeah, disappointment. So you may not know this about me, but when I was a kid, I ate a lot of Raisin Bran. I did. And for those of you who don't know, Raisin Bran got its start when the heads of many large wallpaper-paste corporations came together, and they were to discuss a decline in the industry. And at the table, some ideas were circulated, and somebody at the table said, "I know, we could make it into a cereal." And then somebody else said, "Well, wait a minute, here's the thing, I don't think anybody's going to want to eat this." And then somebody else said, "What if we added raisins?" And so Raisin Bran was born. And Raisin Bran did very, very well, but by the late 80s, Raisin Bran needed a little bit of a booster shot in the arm. And so they started looking into what they could do to, you know, get interest back up. You know, hey, well, now we'll have two scoops, two whole scoops of raisins. And so one scoop was not adequate. And by the late 80s, they got together and said, "Listen, we need something. We need a mascot or something. We're not going to do a leprechaun. We're not going to have superstitious marshmallows. We're not going to put athletes on the box because that's, you know, Wheaties is already doing that and that's cheesy. No, you know what we're going to do? We're going to get some living, breathing raisins. And they're going to sing and they're going to dance. They're going to sing Motown records and we're going to give them a TV show." And that's what they did, the California Raisins. And I was 4 years old. I watched it religiously. And one day a commercial break came on. "Now, you can find in specially marked boxes your very own California Raisin." And I was like, "Wow, mind blown. I love this show. And I'm going to get one of my own living, breathing, anthropomorphic raisins." I was four. And so I went into the kitchen and I said, "Mom, can we get Raisin Bran? I want some Raisin Bran." And she's like, "We have plenty of Raisin Bran already." And I said, "How much?" And I started to do the math. You know what I mean? Like, if I ate this much every day, by Saturday, I would have my California Raisin. And so I ate probably once and a half as much as I would normally eat. And I ate it five times a day until I got through like two boxes. And I got to the end, and finally, you know, a shiny new purple box came, and it was a specially marked box. And so I opened that thing, and I started burrowing. I mean, there was, you know, flakes flying everywhere. I was going to get to the bottom of that thing. And I pulled it out. There was a little plastic package. And I looked at it. It was a little piece of molded plastic. It looked like something maybe a dog left behind. It did not sing. It did not dance. It didn't even bend well. I think that might have been the first big disappointment of my life. What? It wasn't the last. We all have disappointments, and by the time you get to be an adult, most of them are a little more serious feeling than pulling out a crappy toy out of an expensive box of wallpaper paste. See, we all have this thing where we have an idea about how things ought to be, right? We have a hope or a dream. This is how my life should be. This is how it should look if everything goes correctly. And it looks a certain way. You know, I have a romance or a marriage or whatever. It's supposed to look like, over here, this. It's going to look like this. I have an idea, or I have a friendship that's going to look like this over here in this imaginary box, or I have a job or a type of a work I'm going to do or a type of volunteering, and it's going to look more or less like this. A spending ability, or, you know, the way we're going to have our house or where we're going to go on vacation. Are we even going to have vacation? My life is going to look like this over here. We have an idea. And so we set that up there and we hope for it. But sometimes when over there gets to become here, turns out that a whole lot of this isn't even there, or a whole lot of this doesn't even do what we thought it was going to do when we got it. How often has that happened? You hope for something, you dream for something, you finally get to there. Like, oh, I got that person to go out with me. Oh, I got a relationship. Oh, I got that job. Oh, I got to go to Disney World. And you get there and it's like, well, it's, you know, I got it. It's here. All the elements, all the pieces are there. I just thought this was going to do more for me when I got here than I'm getting. That's disappointment. And it gives us this unsettled, kind of sour feeling. And you could describe it a lot of ways. Sometimes it turns into frustration. You know, sometimes it makes you anxious or angry. Sometimes it just makes you depressed. Sometimes if you've gone through enough disappointments like that in your life, sometimes you become kind of cynical. You're always kind of sarcastic. You're always kind of playing to the negative, shedding light on the dark stuff. Cynical. And here's the thing. When you get disappointed, it's like, as long as that one thing isn't right, as long as that one thing isn't the way it's supposed to be, whatever that looks like for you, it's like nothing else can be okay. Nothing else is okay. How are you, Kevin? Well, my girlfriend dumped me for my best friend. But everything else is going pretty good, actually, so yeah, I'm doing pretty good. You know, nobody believes that. How are you, Becky? Well, turns out I have cancer. Huh. How are you liking your new house? You don't do that. Because why? Because when somebody has a massive disappointment in their life, it feels like nothing else can ever be okay until that thing gets fixed. That thing, if that thing would just get fixed, if it would just be the way it's supposed to be, then I could be happy. Then I could be content. Then I could finally get to satisfaction. Hard to get to that, though, isn't it? You ever played whack-a-mole? You know, it used to be at Chuck E. Cheese's. It's hard to hit enough of the moles down fast enough to keep them all down so that you can feel like you've accomplished something. I have something for you today. If you feel a little bit like your life has been a little game of whack-a-mole for a while, chasing after all the things, trying to bring them in order, hoping that finally someday you can make everything the way it's supposed to be and you'd never get there. This is a message for you. I have something for you I want to offer that could be the beginning of something radical, a change in the quality of your life. And what I'm going to offer up to you is that maybe, if you have a lot of discontent in your life, a lot of dissatisfaction and disappointment, maybe what's going on around you isn't as much to blame for what's going on in you as you think. Maybe they're not quite as close together as you think. How you're doing versus how things are going for you. And I want you to look at an old proverb from the Old Testament. Proverbs are little pieces, pearls of wisdom, we'll call them. King Solomon wrote most of them, we believe. And this is from Proverbs 18:14. And I want you to listen to this. Just try. Proverbs are hard sometimes. You know, sometimes it's like, oh, you know, as a man walk with the sun behind him, the towels will be wet on the ground in the morning. You're like, what? I don't know what to do with that. But there's power here, and there's something here that you may never have considered, okay? It says this: the spirit of a man can endure his sickness. The spirit of a man can endure his sickness. But a broken spirit, who can bear? This is to say, listen to me here, there is something inside of every person. He calls that a spirit. There's something inside a person that is responsible for how you are really doing. And that thing, if you don't call it a spirit, call it something else. Maybe your internal fortitude or your heart, I don't know what you want to call this. There's something inside of you, and that thing, if it's strong, if it's doing what it's supposed to do, can carry you through things when things are not going the way they are supposed to be. In other words, you can be laying inside a hospital bed somewhere and have all kinds of afflictions, he says, but if your spirit is in right order, if your spirit is doing what it is meant to do, it can actually carry you through. You can be okay even though things around you are not okay. He says, but a broken spirit, who can bear? In other words, if your spirit is busted, it doesn't matter what's going on around you. Good, bad, ugly, mediocre, medium, it doesn't matter. If the spirit of a person is not right, it doesn't matter. Things could be going awesome. You won't be able to take it. Things could be going terrible. You won't be able to take it. You won't be okay. You'll not be okay if your spirit is not strong. Weird. If you believe that, and I'm not saying you do, I'm just trying to persuade you to think outside the box for a second. Think of something you've never thought about. But if you believe that, that means that the circumstances of your life are not nearly as powerful or responsible for how you are really doing in here. Interesting. I'm not going to stop there, though. I want you to go on a little trip for me, okay? I want you to imagine that, let's say think of the two biggest things in your life that are not the way they're supposed to go. Two current disappointments. Everybody's got one, don't you? You got one. I know you do. Everybody's got something because you can't control enough of your life and you can't control it for long enough. You've got something that's not going the way that it's supposed to be. And I want you to think of the two biggest ones that you can. What are they? Is it, a family thing, a money thing, a house thing, a friend thing, a job thing? Is it a school thing? Is it a I don't know what thing? I want you to think about those things and just imagine that life maybe is not a game of whack-a-mole for a moment. Maybe imagine that somehow, even though those things are not the way they are supposed to be, you could be okay. Some people think that's impossible. If you really look inside yourself, you think that's impossible. There's no way I could ever be okay if this is the way that it is. Very, very hard. But I want you to think for a moment and listen to somebody named Paul for a second. I want you to imagine a guy who things are not going very well for. Paul wrote a letter to the Philippians. That's what we're going to look at in a second. Paul wrote a letter to the Philippians, a church that he had helped plant. And the thing is, Paul was not having a very good time. Paul was in prison. He had been charged. He had been accused of things he didn't do. He was charged for civil unrest and, bringing on riots and making people crazy and governmental, bad stuff, right? And he hadn't really done anything wrong, but he'd been accused of it, and so he's waiting in prison to see if the charges stick. And in the middle of all that, you don't know this just from reading this, but Paul has been so incredibly sick, he's almost died. So he's laying in prison and being really, really, really sick. And I'm telling you, when you go back a couple of thousand years, it's not like today where, you get kind of sick. Well, you can take something to at least help you along, get you, some Advil or something. No, they didn't have it. When you were sick, you were just rotten sick, and you could be sick for like weeks. You might wake up, you don't even know how long you've been laying there sick. You don't even know. But you're just so out of it, and nobody's really taking care of you. And so Paul writes this letter, and it's not the letter that you would expect. It's not a woe is me letter. It's not, I just need you to pray for this and this and this and this and me and me and me and me and I need this and I need this and I need this and please send, And it's not like that at all. It's actually written to encourage them, which is already crazy. That's where Paul is in life. He has terrible things happening. He's writing letters to encourage other people. Listen to what this guy says. He's had someone send him some help from this church, this Philippian church. Somebody actually came to him to help him out. He didn't ask for it, but they came. He says this, I rejoiced greatly in the Lord. I was really, really psyched. Okay, I was really, really excited. Did my heart good. I rejoiced greatly in the Lord that at last you renewed your concern for me. Indeed, you have been concerned, but you had no opportunity to show it. In other words, I wasn't having all this trouble, and you didn't have a big thing to do for me because I don't really need you to do a big thing. But you just did it, and it did my heart good. But he says this, I am not saying this because I'm in need. I wasn't sitting here thinking, woe is me, they better send some help, send me some money, send me some. No, I wasn't saying this because I'm in need, for I have learned to be content whatever the circumstances. What? Really? Sure, you don't have, some like sick dementia going on, still kind of hazy. Oh, I'm always content, always good. I'm going to pass out because you got such a high fever. No, he says, for I've learned to be content whatever the circumstances. Paul says, there's a way to be okay when things are not okay. There is a way to be okay, and I've learned it. He goes on, I know what it is to be in need. I know what it is to be in need, and I know what it is to have plenty. I've been on both sides of the coin. I've been in bad, bad, bad shape. I've been stoned to death. I've been shipwrecked. I've been in some bad spots. Starving to death because because things are bad and people are chasing me around, want to assassinate me. Things have been bad. I know what it is to be in need. I know also what it is to have plenty. But here he says, I have learned the secret to being content in any and every situation, whether well-fed or hungry, whether living in plenty or in want. Really? You ready for it? Here it comes. I can do all things. This is the secret. I can do all things. In other words, I can deal with anything. I can deal. I can be okay throughout whatever comes my way. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. I want you to think about that for a moment. That's not what I would have written. I would have written, I can do all things through Christ who gave me his easy button. Got a problem? Boop, that was easy. It's gone. I want some more of the mountain moving thing. I want to pray, the mountain's in front of me, get out of my way. It's gone. Moving on. That's what I want, right? I can do all things through Christ who zaps my problems away. Now I want to be very careful because there are some problems that Christ may have zapped away for you in the past. And there may be some things in your life that there's no way to overcome this thing except God's got to do something. It's on you to ask God so that God can help you and do something. But Paul says, look, those things may not get you contentment. You are thinking in your head, if my problems would just go away, then I would be content. He said, no, that is not the secret. God very well may help you out and do miracles and cool things for you, but that is not what's going to bring you contentment. Not going to work. I have learned the secret, and the secret is that Christ does something in me. Christ is doing something in me. I used to think I need Christ to change all my circumstances and then I'll be okay. No, he says the secret to being content in any and every situation is that Christ is doing something to strengthen me where I was weak in my spirit. Oh boy. See, I wouldn't have written that. I don't think anybody else would have either. if they hadn't gone through it, if they hadn't experienced what that was like. See, you and me both, all of us, we got things. We've got things that don't go the way that they are supposed to go. Your marriage isn't going the way it's supposed to go. Your job's not going the way it's supposed to go. Your kids are not being raised the way they're supposed to blossom and turn into magnificent sunflowers of awesomeness. The economy is not the way it's supposed to go. The political scene is not the way it's supposed to go. And there is an endless sea of things, an infinite sea of things that should be going some other way than the way that they are going. And what I want to tell you, what I want to speak through the words of Paul, God's words to you, is that if you look through life with the glasses that you will not be content until this one thing or this two things or this three things can be put right. If you will always be stressed, anxious, sad, cynical until that one thing could just get put back the way it's supposed to be, you will be playing a game of fruitless whack-a-mole for the rest of your life. Because you cannot control the circumstances around you. Not nearly well enough to make you happy. And even the ones you can control a little bit, how long can you even hold out for? So don't let that be it. Paul says there's something else. There's something else. I would really prefer there was a different way, right? Because the idea of my spirit being strengthened already triggers red flags. Red flag, red flag, red flag. My spirit, no, wait. I thought things were supposed to change out here. You're saying things need to be changed in here. And here's the thing. I can't even change the things in here that need to get changed. I can't make myself stronger. Paul, you're saying Christ had to do something for you, in you, that you could not do. Already there's this tension in my head. But if you're saying the point is for me to get stronger, that means it sounds like you're not going to just fix this. Right? I don't know how many of you have kids. Some of you are kids. So you can relate either way. Okay, you go up to mom or dad, right? You say, Mom, I want to do this, or the thing's busted, or, you know, the TV, the cable's not coming on, and what, you know... The parent starts to talk. And it's the moment you figure out, that they're not going to just push the button and make the thing better, you just stop, you tune out. You're like, oh, never mind. Isn't that what we do? Don't do that to God right now. Please, I'm praying for you. Please don't do that to God right now. Because you're assuming that his solution is not going to be as good as the solution you would have come up with. Don't do that. Right now, I believe that God speaks to us all through the words and the experience of Paul, someone who had experienced God and spent a very great deal of time with God. He's speaking to us all and he's saying, listen, the discontent, the constant anxiousness, the frustration that never goes away, the restlessness that you have in your spirit. I can fix that. I really can fix that. That thing I said about, you know, come to me, you who are heavy laden and weary, you know, I will give you rest for your souls. I actually intend to do that. But you got to trust me. Please don't hear this. Don't just come up to me and hear this and say, oh, no, you're not going to fix it? Then I'm out of here. Please don't do that for a moment because maybe, big maybe, right? Maybe God actually knows as much about that as he says he does. That's a leap of faith for some people. I understand that. What I'm getting to is that It's not that you should never pray again for something to change. Please, please, oh my gosh, I'll get kicked out of here if you all go home thinking that. Okay, listen. Please do not think you should never ask God for something to be different on someone else's behalf or for your behalf. He's God. You know, you don't have anything to fear to go to God and say, God, you know, I would love it if this could get better. He wants you to ask him. He wants you to ask him. But it may be there's a prayer that has been missing in your prayer life, whatever that looks like. When stuff comes up, you say, God, make this thing go away. You may have prayed about your thing or your two things, your three things. You may have prayed, right? You say, God, please make this go away. You may even have kept it up for a while. You may have kept it up for a while and then said, you know what, God, if you're not going to fix this and at least like make me numb so I don't care anymore. And if you didn't ask God to do that, you may have tried to do it yourself. Right? Isn't that what we do? We have this way, you know, well, if this, I hope for this so much. I love this idea so much that if I can't have it, I need to just sort of like shut my emotions down so I can't feel anything anymore. And then I won't care, and that'll be okay. Then I'll be okay. I believe what God is speaking to us all is there's actually an option you never thought of. Maybe you thought of it, you forgot it. Got distracted. Things got heavy. You know, things do that. There's another option. You can have something that's not the way it's supposed to be right in front of you, right in your face all the time. And I will do something with you to make you strong enough that you can actually be content. You can, now listen, this is where it gets crazy. You can still hope and want and love the idea of it getting better. And you can pray to me for that to get better and change. But if it doesn't come out the way you want it right now, you can still be content. How is that possible? How is that possible? God is saying, I can do that. You cannot do that. For you, it is impossible. For me, I can do that. What it all comes down to, I'm just asking you. Number one, if you have just done one of those things, if you have stopped praying about the thing that matters, or if you have gotten so hardened or so calloused from not being able to see the breakthrough that you want to see in your life, I'm asking you, number one, come back, start to pray again. Start to pray again. Start to hope again. Oh, no, I don't want to hope. I don't want to hope because if then I hope, it hurts too much. It's too much. I can't do that. I don't want to do that. Come back. Give God a little bit of faith and come back and actually pray for that thing again. But in that prayer, I want you to pray something you may never have prayed before because it's too scary or it sounds like it's not faith. I'm asking you to come back and pray and say, God, whatever happens, you strengthen me in my spirit so that I can be okay. I can walk through whatever it takes to go through this thing. You put something in me that I don't have right now. You strengthen me. I would advise you make that part of every single prayer you pray when you want to see something different happen. See, there are a lot of us people, I said us in there, and we walk around and we're so discontent. We're so used to being discontent, disappointed. And we don't even realize, honestly, everything could change, and we'd still be the same. There are tons of things that could change for us, external circumstances that could change. And we're walking around convinced. The reason I'm so anxious, the reason I'm so restless, is because the things outside are not right. What if there's more to it than that? What if some of those outside circumstances that God has not given over to you to be the way that you want, what if those are actually there to reveal to you the weakness that is in your spirit? What if he allows some things, even though you pray, so that you can see what's really in there? What if you realized that today? And what if you changed how you saw it? And what if you changed how you talked to God and related to God about that? I wonder what kind of peace could become available to you. That's my pitch for today. I want to pray for everybody here. And I hope that you join in with me. If you've never done that before, or you're not sure, that's okay. Just listen and see how you feel about what I'm saying. Lord, this is a restless life. Seems like more goes wrong than goes right. So many disappointments. Things that should have been if everybody'd been behaving themselves. Things that would have been if only things had gone right. If only that one thing had not happened. There's so many things that could be different in our eyes that would be right. And yet you look to us, you look to our heart and our soul, and you say, the thing that I am most concerned about is what is going on in your spirit. Lord, if you have allowed external circumstances to bring weakness in our spirit to light, then I pray, Lord, strengthen us. Strengthen us in our spirit that we would be able to endure sickness, endure relationship problems, endure things with our friends and family, endure things in the economy, in our money situation, in our cars or our personal lives, some other place, Lord. Strengthen us in our spirit so that we can be able to look to you and say, Lord, although these things are not what I would pick or prefer, I am content somehow, inexplicably, in you. And I pray for that person who's thinking about these things in these ways for maybe the first time ever. For that person who's gone through life and just been chasing boxes, checking off a box. This thing isn't right, so I'll fix this and then it'll be okay. Another one pops up. No, then I'll have to fix this one. Then it'll be okay, finally. No, another one. And it just keeps going. I pray for that person, Lord, this morning. I pray, Lord, that you put a beautiful pearl of hope in their hearts this morning, that this is not actually your plan. You have something better than this in mind. I pray, Lord, that they could come back to that again and again this week, Lord. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen. Amen. Thank you for being here today. Listen, if you are going to lunch at my house, imagine that, lunch at my house today, you're a newer person to the church, we can leave pretty much